This is a production of Cornell University.
Welcome, everybody, to the seventh meeting of the Cornell University Graduate and Professional Student Assembly, April 23rd. It is 5:31 p.m., Malott Hall, Bach Auditorium. Thanks very much for coming to this, the last meeting of our auspicious semester. It's a busy agenda, and of course, as you know, there's wine, cheese, and beer waiting for us at the Big Red Barn after this, so that I think will give us an incentive to finish as quickly as we can. So I'll try to move this along. We'll begin with a roll call of the voting members. Branda Adra, Kyle Albert, Brian Alkemeyer,
here.
Steve Ahn is interviewing for a job. Nicole Baran,
here.
YJ Chen,
here.
John Chechelevsky had a last minute something. Something important, don't get me wrong, I'm not trivializing. Evan Cortens here. Andrew Elliott,
here.
Carl Furkenhoff is looking at like stars with a telescope or something, I didn't understand. Marquise Hawkins has got better things to do, he's in Virginia Beach. James Keach, Allison Nash,
here.
Liz Newberry,
here.
Rebecca Robbins,
here.
Better than the GPSA, really? Eric Smith,
here.
Mia Tutil is even better than playing with a telescope, trapped in the Newark airport. I know. Michelle White, Krista Wilson, excellent. Let me just make sure we've got a quorum. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. By one. Quorum by one. Wonderful. We move now to the first item on the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes from April 9th. I have a correction from Brian. He rewrote the statements that referred to him. I'm in support of the resolution, but I'm wondering if we can consider alternatives to the language about alumni to make the reasons for our policy clearer. And then later, maybe we could add a statement about granting exceptions along the lines that others have been suggesting. Is there any objection to these changes? Seeing none, the minutes are so amended. Are there any further corrections to the minutes? Allison?
When I was speaking in behalf of my constituents in architecture, I don't know exactly where that is, I believe, Chris responded with an explanation that other departments also disagreed with shortening
the period. So it's most likely that the amount of time for the period was close to the same. Chris, is that a fair summary? Can you, is it big enough that you can read it?
It is.
It is fair or it is big enough? Or both?
Good.
Good. Wonderful. Any objection to that correction? Seeing none, the minutes are so amended. Any further corrections to the minutes? Seeing no further corrections to the minutes, is there any objection to the approval of the minutes from April 9th, 2012? Seeing no objection, the minutes are approved. We move now to reports of officers and committee updates. Executive Committee, we're still looking for people to serve on the Academic Hearing and Integrity Board for the graduate school. Please let me know if you're interested. The committee, we went to the NAGPS Regional Conference this weekend, so that, as you know, the GPSA renewed its association with the National Association of Graduate Professional Students. It was very, very productive. Great keynote about advocacy in higher education. Very interesting presentation about the NAGPS developing a survey that could be rolled out across a number of different schools. As someone who was on the survey committee last year, I know the amount of work that it takes to develop a valid and rigorous survey. I think that this kind of effort is wonderful. In getting better data collection across higher ed. Whether this will make sense for Cornell, of course, remains to be seen, but I commend them certainly for engaging in this sort of thing. I think that's all I have.
I had a quick update from the ad hoc
ad hoc committee on teaching, advising, and mentoring of graduate professional students, which is that we accepted our nominations and decided on our winners for the Faculty Mentoring Award. And the winners are Edwin Todd Cowan, Associate Professor in Civil and Environmental Engineering, Christine Smart, Associate Professor in Plant Pathology and Plant Microbiology up at the Geneva campus, and Muna Majula, Professor of Law and Director of the Institute for African Development. These letters, we got over 30 different nominating letters representing the views of over 55 graduate professional students for 15 different faculty members, and they were just the most passionate and heartwarming letters to read. It was really tough to make a decision because every one of the individuals that was nominated were really excellent representatives of the quality of teaching and mentorship that we should hope everyone gets to have as a graduate professional student. So it was really exciting. We're going to have our award ceremony coming up on May 8th to recognize these faculty members. Anyway, an update on that.
Great. Thanks. Appropriations, Chris. Communications, Steve is out of town. Is Marcus here? Any update? Wonderful. Finance Commission, Mia, as you know, got stuck in an airport. She would like me to remind you that the deadline for fiscal year 13 annual budgets and summer funding requests is this Friday, April 27th at 4 p.m. The funding guidelines on the website are now up to date, reflect the changes in Resolution 14. So tell your friends at the parties that you go to where you talk about funding guidelines. I emailed her back, but I hadn't gotten a response yet. I didn't have this written down, but I'm sure if she were here, she would ask you to volunteer for the annual funding day. I don't know when or where that is. She's announced it previously. I just didn't have the information at hand. If that's a great opportunity to get involved in the FC next year, if that's something you're interested in doing, get to learn the ropes. There's free food. It's a lot of fun. Student advocacy, Rebecca.
Awesome. All right, our second event is a stress management workshop. We're the first event that we did in the fall was an opportunity to collect data and have kind of a focus group kind of a context. To understand issues facing our community, our coach this way was to kind of take that and say, okay, can we do something to help people? So, to that end, we have worked with Diane Hack to organize a stress management workshop. She's a certified meditation and stress management instructor. So, it'll be an hour and a half or so of kind of benefits of meditation and stress management, and then moving into a discussion about implementing these things in our lives as graduate students and hopefully the ultimate goal of making these things a priority among our colleagues. So, boom, spread the word, far and wide, graduate students only, because we were funded by the graduate school, of course. But this is something I will send out to the field as soon as the meeting is over. So, have at it. Spread the word. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Programming board, YJ.
Still trying to get your tickets for grad ball, which is this Friday. I bet some of you will be even more spectacular with this show. Or if you're adult crank with this show. But anyway, here are some posters. You're going to pass them around, take one or two, but pick them up where you think other grad students can see this. So, there are only 50 left. Get them soon, or else there won't be any left. No, actually, we've sold around 180 so far. So, still a lot of work to do. We're hoping to reach 500. More the merrier. So, please get the word out. Ask your friends to come. Convince them that $20 is really a good deal. We're subsidizing, actually, the cost of the what it costs each attendant to attend an event. You get bus transportation. You get two drinks. You get food. Get a nice DJ, get a special lighting show, and get an actual red carpet to walk on. So, it's a really good deal for $20.
Is there paparazzi, like it suggests in the poster?
We might be able to arrange that with some of the volunteers.
Excellent.
Wait, don't you need volunteers?
Oh, we have three spots left for volunteers. So, if you want to volunteer, $20. If you are strapped for cash, that's the way to get them for free. You can sign up through our website.
That concludes the portion that was on our agenda. From the UA, you might be interested to know that Resolution 7, which was the resolution advocating the move of crimes of sexual harassment and sexual violence be moved from the Code of Conduct into Policy 6.4, was accepted by the President, was passed by the UA, and then accepted by the President, so that process will begin. The UA will be very involved, of course, in making its feelings heard about Policy 6.4 and its revisions as they affect students, all students. If that's something that interests you, may I suggest that you consider either running for one of our two UA positions or getting involved in the CJC through the GPSA, more acronyms, next year. Any other updates? Other UA stuff? Trustees? Seeing none, we'll move into our professional development panel. So we thought it would be a wonderful idea to cap off our semester with some of the great work that's going on across campus under the broad rubric of professional development. I've certainly left that term intentionally vague, reflecting the diversity of work that happens in this area. To that end, we've invited four participants from the graduate school and the three professional schools, Tillman Baumstark, Jay Sweet, Jose Gaztambide, who I don't see here yet, but said he would be here soon, and Han Liu, our very own voting member next year from the law school. Shall we start with Tillman? We'll do 5 minutes or so per panelist, and then we should have time for a little discussion at the end.
Good evening, and thank you very much for taking time to listen to what we have to say. I'm very excited to be here. I've been with Cornell since September of last year, and so I've been involved with the GPSA since January, when I was sort of awarded the title of liaison to the GPSA. And so since my teammates are coming to via meetings, and I've been meeting with the executive leadership team. And if we get voting on this, my title is System Dean for Professional Development. So that's my portfolio, professional development. So I think a quick recap of where we come from. The Office of Inclusion and Professional Development is actually a new thing. Sort of Dean Newth, Vice Provost, and Dean is herself in that particular function since 2010, and sort of a series of reorganizations at the graduate schools have led to the creation of this Office of Inclusion and Professional Development, with the hire of Dr. Notaro, Sharon Notaro, who's the Associate Dean for Inclusion and Professional Development in August of 2011, and then my hire in September of 2011 as the Assistant Dean. Christine Holmes has been with Cornell and the graduate school for quite a number of years, and you may know her. She's director of postdoctoral studies, but she joined that newly created office. And so did Cindy Gray, who's our program and events coordinator. So to people here, people, and to people who are new, obviously Dean Notaro has been in this area for a longer time, and I crossed over from the faculty side. So that's the background. And when we came here, sort of our first approach was to really meet people, to listen, to learn, and make a connection. And as you know, as graduate students, that's not an easy task when I'm huge, and there are a lot of people to meet and to get to know. So what we did first is sort of decide what it means. And we talked to focus groups, we brought some graduate students in and sort of just listen and get a first feel, obviously, that it's somewhat subjective, but it gives us an idea where some of the needs are. We brought in faculty and especially the graduate studies to get their perspective, what do they feel is lacking, and then started to work on updating survey instruments to get a really systematic feedback from you on what it is that you feel works well and what it is that you feel needs to be improved. This is obviously a much more expanded task because where we're trying to get the new students, the sort of the twice a year, as, you know, every 2 years, sort of a student experience, satisfaction type of student survey, and then the exit survey. So this is more than just professional development, and the associate dean, Sarah Bisher, has taken this on. She works with the graduate student services and data people and the Cornell Survey Research Institute. We've been involved in the development of this survey, and we will have contributions from GPSA as this is getting into the later stages, and then from national peers. We wanted to create surveys that match what other IDs and corresponding institutions do, so we can compare our data. There will be a test run, and that is where some of you come in. I'll have conversations because we need volunteers for each of these surveys, so we can see how it works, how long does it take, and just how this rollout works for the fall when we'll bring it on to all the students. Then also realizing that there's a lot of professional development going on campus. We did sort of a survey just by going through all the emails we're getting, go on the website, and I counted 160 and up of events and programs that have professional development as a major piece. I personally have attended 24 of those, just going around and seeing sort of what is it, you know, something engineering is offering, what CEPA is offering, and there are fantastic things out there. So our sort of rollout in the fall, other than listening and finding out, is obviously we had some programming, some existing programming, because Christine Holmes, for example, has been here for a while, so she continued to do her programs, such as CV to resume, how to write a teaching statement, how to write a research statement, how to apply for academic positions, how to get ready for a non-academic job search. These are all programs that have been offered before and that we'll continue to offer, probably in an expanded form. In blue, some of the new things we want to roll out come fall, now that Dr. Nataro and I are on board. And this brown bag series on ethics and responsible conduct and research. Modules that be under the title of, you know, navigating the graduate school, such as milestones, exams, how do you put your committee together, how do you select an advisor. These are the kind of topics we continue to hear that they're on your mind. Dissertation writing, we've looked around what other peer institutions do, and there's sort of a number of interesting models, and we're working on rolling out some of the dissertation boot camp in the fall. And as with many of these new efforts, there we'll find out how it works. So we look forward to get your feedback on each and every one of these to see like what could be better, and so things may change. So whatever the boot camp is in 2012 might be different in 2013 and so on. Academic writing for journals, academic writing for grants, and those kind of funding, networking, these are all programs that are on the books, so watch out for those being announced in the fall. So some of the what are some of the observations for someone who's new to professional development or graduate school? There's many, many things going on by a number of really devoted groups and units on campus. So it's the same effort, excellent programming. They're not always named such that it looks like everyone could go to it, but the ones that I come to, they say, you know, what can you do with your PhD? Engineering is offering it. Anyone who's going for a PhD would have benefited from this. If it's sub-general, anyone would have really had a good time. So the challenge is really the communication. How do you know? How do all the registrants know what's being offered? And then once you know, what's sort of the time frame you have to put this into your schedule? I get a lot of these, 99% of the announcements I receive have an expiration time of about 2 days. So I have 2 days to get the news out to you, and you then have less than 2 days to make up your mind and fit that into your schedule. Obviously, that's something we'll have to work on. And so what are some of the approaches from our end? We try to improve our website, get things updated faster in terms of professional development. I've been made the new bomb for everything coming to me, and then I'm sending it to the director of communications, and we work on getting all of these out on a much faster pace. So invite you to check sort of the new graduate school website for professional development on a regular basis. Graduate announcements, you heard that before, sort of can now be expected, and now that we do that, do you send you the listing. And then, of course, all the lists are, so a number of this, these informations may come in from different directions. So there's sort of a certain level of saturation. You may get on one, but you might get it through another. And so what I'm trying to think is that I would like to do going forward. Obviously, we have to work with communication, and it's not just like doing more of it. I'm looking to find solutions where we're doing it smarter. So I thought and talk a lot with people about an interactive website where you might put in the state you're in, the kind of field you're in, the area you're interested in a very general way. And this interactive website would be suggestions and recommendations to you. So one site stuff. You don't have to go around and look what the union is doing, and some people would like to gather all of this information and you can find it. Be talking with people about social media, about mobile apps, you can get information on your phone. These things may take a longer time. This is for now, and you know where the level of technology is here, so this may take multiple conversations and getting people together. But again, this would you all much more on that boat than some of the people I talked to. So I look forward to partnering with people to maybe develop some kind of in a show in the administration, this is how it will go about. Better coordination, expanded partnerships, obviously we need to connect these pockets of excellence and help work with the newcomers. We want to partner with the diversity programs in engineering, the fantastic programs that they are putting out. CIPA, ILR, I was just mentioning a few of the we're actually going to program, and if we can, as a graduate school, expand these, open these up for all of you, I think that's a new opportunity. There's a new position for which we're searching right now, and we're hiring for the review services, which is funded through a graduate school, which will be half a graduate student and half international. So in 3 weeks, hopefully we will have a candidate and a person that is dedicated to the issues of graduate students going to college and international students. Coordinating with the faculty and the field, they have programs, they have a lot of interactions with you and then opportunity with you to GPSA. This is my last slide. What is it that we can do between the office and the assembly? Well, obviously it's two-way conversations are always a great start and we're having those already. Your leadership meets regularly with the news. Since I've been living at home for this case, I started to meet regularly as well. And then, of course, meetings such as today where you invite people to come and speak. And then any ad hoc meetings that you know you want to have. If something comes up, I'm there, I'm there, together on projects. In terms of coordination and participation, it's already working with the older lectures that you're contributing and who are invited. Survey development, the survey instruments will come to you and hopefully your impact on this will make it even better. Orientation is something that you've always worked with us, and we look forward to put more professional development always in the beginning of grad student studies. So when they come in for orientation, you already want to see the kind of offerings that we hope to bring in. So again, this is where the GPSA comes in. Come fall, bringing together all of these different constituents, I hope to put together sort of a council, an advisory board for professional development, and also have a strong component of grad students, some faculty, and some of these other programs that offer professional development to sort of constantly advise us on the kind of things you would like to see and get everything here in front of us. And that's the Office of Inclusion and Professional Development. Thank you.
Thanks very much. We'll move now to Jay Sweet, director from the College of Veterinary Medicine.
Thank you. I'm going to do this much more casually because that's what Evan told me.
Sure, yeah.
Anyway, so I just have a few points that I just wanted to share with you with respect to the veterinary colleges. The veterinary college is a pretty unique school, given that it's a professional school, so this is a four-year professional school, and the cohorts of students were going through the curriculum with each other, so in some ways it's a lot more easy to define what anyone needs at any given point in their four-year journey. The second is that it's a small school. We have 350 to 380 students at most, and so many of us know everyone by name. I know Michelle's there, and I know Andrew is there. So communication in some ways is easier, and we hope that students feel the same way and can come share with us on a regular basis what they feel they need or may be missing, and the same goes for working together on, you know, coordinating our efforts, because there's so much going on, even though it's a small college, and every day there's so much going on that one thing we don't want to do is work across purposes with students there. 30 plus student organizations at the vet school alone, and many of them are specialty based, so they have their own lecture series and work on specifics related to their area as far as professional development is concerned. So what I try to do lately is work more closely with the student organizations so that we can join forces and try to provide one for the students. But as far as the general professional development is concerned, there are some official channels of conveying some of the skills that students might need by the time they graduate, and then there are some more unofficial channels of doing this. We have two courses in particular where some of these issues are addressed. There's a veterinary practice course, which is a foundation course where all veterinary students are required to take the course, and some components of professional development are addressed in this. There are some issues with this ethics addressed, the beginnings of resume writing and how do you develop a professional image, all of that, and that's just to really sow the seeds in the minds of the students about what they should be thinking about. And this happens the first or second semester of the first year, so it's early on. When students consider Cornell for veterinary medicine, we do tell them everything that we have available for them, as we think that might, it's useful in helping students determine whether they want to go to Penn or to Cornell or any other school, veterinary school. There is another course that's offered in the curriculum that's not a foundation course. It's an elective course for the vast majority, I would say 90 to 99% of the students take it, and it's called veterinary practice management. So the veterinary profession, many of the students go into practice, whether small animal or large animal practice, so business. Knowing about how to manage a practice is like everything that goes along with it, in terms of communicating, motivating your teammates and motivating your associates and finances, and all those issues that are addressed in the veterinary practice management course. Other things, the issue of resumes is brought up. Some of the other things that students are taught at this point is how to budget. So when you go into your final year and trying to select or trying to figure out what the various job offers are and how you're going to weigh these options, they are taught to think seriously about, unfortunately, the debt that they're coming out with. Unlike some graduate students, most veterinary students do come out with educational debt. So going in and signing on to a particular job, knowing that what they're going to be making is able to afford them a certain quality of living, as well as the ability to pay their student loans. So there is that whole series, negotiating other aspects of a job offer. Again, the veterinary profession is fairly unique to students, and they do have to sign the contract if they're going into practice. And students are taught to look through the contract, figure out really what the red flags might be in a contract. There's something called a non-compete clause where you sign a contract for a two-year period, and you're told that if you ever quit that practice, you're not allowed to practice within a certain range. And if people don't think through those, they're really shut out of places where they might want to live. So those are all things that they I'll talk to you in employment contracts. Evaluating your practice. So when you get multiple job offers, really, what are the things you should be looking for? What kind of questions should you be asking when you go to interview at a practice? Because if you don't ask the right questions, you're not sitting there on the head with whether you're a good fit. And you should be thinking of yourself, not just, you should be thinking about the fit, not just be happy that you're going to be offered a job. It's really, feel good about yourself and know that you are worthy of that job and you are negotiating with them. More and more students have been asking about alternative careers in veterinary medicine. So what is available for students beyond small animal practice or large animal practice or academia, a few students. So we're in the process actually of putting a panel ongoing, an annual series where we will be inviting speakers to talk to students about what other careers they could pursue with a degree in veterinary medicine and what that pathway might look like. Alumni networking. Our alumni base, again, we are unique, not just in terms of being a small college, but in terms of being Cornell veterinary medicine alumni are extremely loyal. So we have a very loyal, about 5,000 alumni who have a very open door policy and are very, very anxious and willing to come and speak with our students. So as far as that's concerned, networking or even inviting alumni back to speak with the students, that's an easy job for me. I can pick up the phone and cold call someone, introduce myself. And if I tell them I'm from Cornell and they are alumni, they are happy to come. And some of them, in fact, are knocking on our doors. And sorry, you can't really come to you at this point. So networking is obviously important, and they are available and willing to network. So the question is encouraging students to network. What we do is if a student comes to me and says they're interested in looking at job possibilities in the Boston area or San Francisco, I work with the Office of Alumni Affairs and Development, and we have our own office at the vet school. So I work with them. We identify the location, the radius, and we pull out from the database all the alumni in that area, and I shoot an email out to all the alumni and say, hey, I have a student interested, would you be okay if I share his or her email? 80% of the time they say sure, and I share that email with the students and I let them take it from there. We've tried other kinds of mentoring programs. We've tried the fact alumni students one-on-one mentoring programs. They haven't succeeded because what we found that at this stage in their education, and Michelle and Andrew feel free to speak, in their education, students are more at the point of information gathering, so they may get something out of alumni one, but 1 month later might be looking for different kinds of answers of questions, and they feel less comfortable being tied to one relationship and the obligation that goes with maintaining that one relationship. So I think a networking database with the option to interact with many different alumni is the way to go. So we've been doing that informally. There is a student alumni networking group. This is a club that was formed recently, and they connect up again through the Alumni Association or the Alumni Affairs and Development Club, connect up with alumni in the area, invite them one a month or multiple alumni a month, just for some very informal networking and conversation. So that seems to be going really well, too. We also have an internship and residency panel. This is, again, unique to the vet school. There are many students who are looking to actually a big decision in many students' lives is, should I go and practice, should I look for a job right out of graduating out of vet school, or should I specialize? And they hear a lot of mixed messages. We are in a lead institution with faculty who have all specialized. So there are mixed messages, and there's a pressure to keep continuing with your education, and it may not be the best answer for everyone. So, we try to offer some different viewpoints, and it's a decision students have to make, but we try to keep those conversations. Thank you.
that's an overview of what we offer.
Okay. Thank you. We'll move now to Han from the last school. Han.
Hey, everyone. I'm going to keep it even more casual, I guess. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Han, and I'm going to be the next voting member representing law school, replacing the awesome Randa. Basically, how professional development works in law school is kind of separated into kind of two different departments. So it's for people who want to go into private practice, and people who want to go into public interest. And we have two separate deans, one for kind of the private practice, one for the public interest, Dean DeRosa and Dean Comstock. Unfortunately, both of them were busy and couldn't be here tonight. So they sent me instead as someone who's gone through the system and had a job, so I guess it worked out for me. Basically, what they do is they kind of run a lot of seminars and for different skills. So we run interviewing practices and have mock interviews. We have workshops on how to write resumes, how to write cover letters, and you can make individual appointments with either the two deans, depending on what you're interested in, or both, if you're interested in both, to kind of correct your resume or your cover letter or your writing sample, which is something that law students all have to submit for their job. And then in terms of the actual job process, we kind of have two job fairs. We have a private job fair in August called the August Job Fair, where it's basically all the law firms, and I would say a good majority of the students get their job from this job fair. So it's kind of like on-campus interviews, except it's in New York City. You go there and then you have firms from all over the country in various different offices, and a lot of them will give you callbacks and some will offer you job offers within that week. And then you have the public interest one, which is in D.C. in February, which is kind of more difficult, kind of an open public interest fair. You show up and you do your interviews there, and sometimes you get jobs there too. And occasionally people will apply independently to various different organizations and various different firms. But I would say a majority of it is through like the official law school channel. And in terms of kind of like lecture series and things like that, the law school has a lot of student organizations, and each of them kind of specializes in their own thing. So you have IP, you have sports, you have entertainment, you have public interest, and each of those kind of brings in their own speakers to kind of talk about the various different careers. And I think the law school does a really good job at kind of doing that, which is the majority of what we spend the GPSA money for. And of course, those are open to the grad school community, so if you guys are interested in some of those cross-bred ones, so like in business, you can come to a business law talk. And I know that there's a business law society and things like that where they kind of advertise for both organizations. That's pretty much it on professional development in law school.
Thanks, Tom. And finally, Jose, president of the Johnson Student Council. Jose, thanks for coming.
Thank you. So I guess first off, I'd like to apologize for being late. I was coming straight in from class. As you said, I'm the president of the student council at the business school in first year. I'll be spending my summer in, a quick month over here doing strategy and operations consulting with Deloitte in San Francisco. So I guess I can talk a little bit about the way that we do things in the business school, but then just kind of wrap it up with some of my lessons that I've learned having gone through the recruiting process for a year. For the business school, there's a very strong sense of mentoring, of learning from the people that have gone through it before you. And so we have what we like to call career work groups, which is where a group of first-year students, so in my case, six students that were interested in consulting, spend the entire semester kind of going through the process with a second-year student who has just come from consulting. And so you go through absolutely everything from all the differences in between the firms, what it takes to write a cover letter, how to tailor your resume specifically to the company or the industry that you're going to be applying to, how to go through the interview process. In our case, a lot of the interview process is case interviews, so you have to analyze the business situation in front of a current practitioner. And so the great part about that is that you're kind of seeing that process through the lens of something that has already done before. And I guess the big learnings for me having gone through the process, and something that I don't think I really appreciated until I went through this, is that you really have to tailor your job search to the particular firm or sometimes even the particular group that you're going to. Because cultural fit is going to be one of the biggest determinations of whether or not you're going to get that job offer or not. In a lot of the careers that we're going to be going into once we graduate, you're going to be spending outrageous number of hours with the people at the firm that you're at. In consulting, we like to call it the airport test. If you were stuck in the Buffalo airport overnight with the person that you're interviewing, would you be happy at the end of that that session? And if the answer is no, you're not getting the job, right? And if the answer is yes, that's when they really start to evaluate you and when you become a really serious candidate. And every industry is going to have something similar to the airport test. And I'm sure that the law school has a different term for it or something along those lines. But the idea is you've got to find a place where you fit in really well culturally, where you feel like you can be yourself, where you feel like you can be genuine. You know, at our business school and in most of the business schools, there's a lot of talk about leadership. And at Johnson, there's a really big focus about genuine leadership. And the idea is if you can figure out who you really are and what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, you're going to be successful and you're going to be happy. And those two things are kind of circular. So the idea is if you can find a place that's a really good fit for you, number one, you need to determine what it means to be a good fit for you. Number two, once you target that place, that's what's going to feed into your success. That's what's going to, when you wake up in the morning, are you going to be thrilled that you're going to work or are you going to be trying to find an excuse to show up half an hour late? So other things that have, other lessons going through the recruiting process, when you go through networking, it's really critical to have what we call your pitch or your story or your elevator pitch, because you don't want to seem unfocused and you don't want to seem like you're just talking because you feel like you have to reach out because you feel like it's a popular alum and you have to get some free time or whatnot, right? You need to know exactly where it is that you're coming from, what it is that you're looking for, and why the firm in particular is a really good fit for you in a very succinct, very limited amount of time. And I know when I was being told this when I first got to the business school, I was like, oh my God, it's all this, you know, like businessy stuff again, right? And just stuff that went right over my head that I didn't think was particularly applicable. But when you are competing against 150 other people for one very competitive spot, you have got to make sure that when somebody thinks about you, that they have a really clear message about what it is that you offer. And maybe in that one particular case, you're not going to be the right fit, but maybe 3 months down the line when an opening comes up, they are going to know exactly that you are the person that they need because you have communicated very clearly what it is that you offer and why it is that you're a good fit. So, yeah, that's my spiel, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Which is the next session.
Thanks, Jose.
So we'll take a couple minutes now for questions for any of our panelists individually or for the whole panel. Kyle?
My question is for Antelman. So what, if anything, is graduate school doing to reduce some of the stigma associated, especially for social science and humanities PhD candidates, in looking at non-academic or non-tenure track career options?
That's a good question. And we can... getting that question from all corners and all colleges and all fields. Mostly, I don't want to say hush, but sort of at a lower voice. And that's very disturbing to us at graduate school, because nationally the discussion is clearly going in the direction that there should not be a stigma, that not everybody can, will or wants to be faculty. The numbers are against that, and there's fantastic careers out there. And so a good part of finding a way to convey that to the institution that one of the things we'll do is roll out a number of programs that are targeted for people who are looking for, and it starts with finding a new work. And again, for this work, you need to have sort of, so is it non-academic, who wants a non-job, right? Is it an alternative career, sort of alternative to what, right? We're even lacking the right terminology to describe that you can want to become faculty, or you can want to go into industry, or you want to go into a non-profit, or be sort of an entrepreneur yourself. So, all of these careers benefit from the education that you get in here at Cornell. So I think we'll have to acknowledge that this will take time because it's an inevitable change of culture. But we will lend our voice to this, sort of from, and this comes all the way out from the dean and vice provost and everyone else that is involved in it. So we will roll our program and we will not be hush about it, but rather excited and I'm happy to be able to provide these opportunities. We'll bring in people, alums that have had these careers that took them elsewhere.
I graduated with PhD in human development from Cornell, and here I am. And so my supervisor just got a PhD in education. That's a different conversation we can talk about today than we can do.
Rebecca?
Sorry, another question for you, children. Thank you, everyone. Really interesting stuff. Something that kind of struck me is that sometimes there's kind of a difference in an approach of the grad school, which seems, tell me correctly if I'm wrong, and my question actually is kind of this is the way it is. Do you see this model going forward as something that is kind of an ad hoc, you know, sign up for a sort of a teaching excellence kind of an approach to education or professional development versus the law school approach? It sounds like it's institutionalized, like it's a class, right? This management class that you were talking about?
There are a couple of courses. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that happens outside, but there are some issues that there's increasing concern at the national level that students need to understand, and that's the approach.
Got it. So I'm just curious for your feedback on that, whether that's something that's part of your vision or...
It is. Well, what we have to acknowledge is that the graduate school position is somewhat interesting, and as it flows over about 100 fields and the number of colleges. So any of the efforts that you sort of that you heard from the colleges that are very targeted, that have an audience where almost everyone wants to go sort of into one direction of either, you know, one or two, but the graduate school has to offer something that really addresses, you know, 7,000 potentially graduate and professional students. And so we will have a mix. We will have, for example, a course, you know, for leadership or something where, you know, there's a course number and you can sign up. But I think a majority of it will be sort of offerings that will bring to the table and then see if, you know, is one thing more popular than another. Do we need to add sections to, you know, thousands want to take the boot camp, or is it sort of a handful to go take the boot camp? You know, a lot of people want to know about research ethics and responsible conduct, or is it a handful? So our approach will depend a little bit on.
We have time maybe for one more question, if there's one. If not, let's thank our four wonderful panelists. Thanks so much. We move now into open forum. Before I recognize Marinda Martin, I wanted to make a announcement in open forum. Those of you who aren't aware, I would like to congratulate Derek Nighthawk Evanson on his re-election as a trustee. There were no appeals to the results, and so it's official now. Congratulations. I'll recognize now Marinda Martin to talk about the Sexual Harassment and Prevention Education Program.
I'm a GPSA's delegate to Cornell's Public Safety Advisory Meeting, and I meet with Cornell Police as well as some other interested people that are involved in that, some faculty representatives. There's also representatives from the undergrad and some people from Gannett as well as a few others. I asked to be put on the agenda for today just because there were a couple of things that they shared that I thought were kind of important. And one of the biggest ones that I just wanted to share with you guys is this this push that both the diversity office, we had the Associate Vice President of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion come speak to us, and she spoke to us about how the university has a renewed commitment to diversity at all levels and in everything. But they've also been supporting, there's been a number of undergraduate groups actually that have been kind of having a push for this, especially with a lot of things that have happened on campus in the last year, and have decided to form kind of this central place. It's going to be a new website that has not rolled out yet, at least as I kept checking the website, but I think by the end of the month it's supposed to be out that's going to be at www.shape.cornell.edu. And it stands for Sexual Harassment and Assault Prevention and Education. And the goal is for it to be kind of a central site where you can know where to go to find resources about these different things, both to become more educated about it, or if you or somebody you know is a victim of this kind of thing, that you can know where to find the resources to learn about it or to get help. And they're also going to have let's see if I go to the next slide. They also are going to, on the same website, show some of, like, have an event section where you can know about some of the talks or different things that might be addressing this topic. Most of these that are on this one that they shared with us have passed already, but there is one on the 26th if anybody's interested in going to that. But as part of this, they're going to have a big push in their advertising PR campaign about it, where they're going to print out a bunch of posters and have them around campus that are going to include both the website, and they're going to have a new email address in case you either have questions, or it's not meant to be for emergency reporting or anything like that, but if you're just unsure about something or just want to know something, there's going to be a new an email address that they're going to monitor regularly and kind of guide you to where you need to go or where the email needs to go. That's going to be nosexualharassment@cornell.edu. Anyway, so this is something that they're going to be pushing a little bit at the end of the semester, and I think a lot in the fall. And these posters are going to have those little QR codes on them as well that will take you directly to some of these websites and some of this information. So that was one of the important things that I thought that they talked about at this meeting. And I thought it was interesting and a good thing that the undergrads were like a big push behind this, but it's something that I actually want the whole Cornell community to be supportive of, both faculty, staff, graduate students, and professional students and the undergrads. So, so Cornell, as an administration, is taking it seriously and kind of backing it up. So I wanted to share it with you guys so that we can have an opportunity to be supportive of it as well as it comes rolled out. Just as one other little note, one of the things they talked about was also fire safety. They also talked about gorge safety, but that seems to be sort of resolved. But fire safety, if any of you live in college town and are interested in this, one of the things they're concerned about is, I guess, a lot of the buildings there aren't up to fire safety codes, and that's because they were grandfathered in because they were built a long time ago. The undergrads are kind of concerned about this because a lot of juniors and seniors live there, but then by the time they realize that this is sort of an issue, they're graduating, and so it kind of doesn't get taken care of. So I know that they would appreciate if any of you that are really interested in that, that wanted to get kind of involved in that fire safety issue, because you have more longevity given that you're here a little bit longer. Anyway, I could put you in touch with some of those who are interested in that. So.
Great. Thanks so much. Are there any other quick comments in open forum? Seeing none, we'll move now into new business. I have a couple of amendments that I just got via email from Chris to Resolution 18. So if you talk slowly, Chris, I will input them while you speak. Chris.
So I really don't want to use too much of our time on this. I sent the voting members a background as to what RIT is about and why it's in front of us. Primarily, it's a showing of good faith. As you know, that slow day programming board and CPSA have been in discussions about how to retain TIGMA's graduate professional student mission. The slow day, while still working within the bounds of what we feel is a fair amount that is given to them, or what we have felt is fair given this past year's funding cycle. Now there was one amendment, and then I'm just going to close, stop talking, but one amendment, or one change to the email that I wrote. The Slope Day Programming Board has not right now had the time to meet with their advisor and sort of okay whether this is an acceptable amendment, and whether these are things that they want to hear from us in order for us to move forward in terms of getting ticket list admission and trying to grow the relationship that we have with Slope Day Programming Board and Slope Day in the future. That being said, I still think that this is a sense of body motion. I don't think it requires too much discussion, or I'm hoping it doesn't. Really, at this point, we're just saying we want to continue working with you, and we feel that slow pace is an important event for graduate professional students. So I'm happy to take questions, but I know that also there is someone that's going to speak against this motion. So I don't know exactly what Robert's Rules of Order said about some questions. I think I have some time and I can see it.
The way it works is that we're in formal debate. Sorry, did I? Tickles? Nothing like a good autocorrect.
It sounds like some of our SA and Associate Programming Board have been part of discussions, and it seems like they have something to say. Should they be waiting until the formal debate has commenced?
The way that this works, we're in formal debate. So the sponsoring member has been recognized to speak in favor. We'll alternate back and forth in favor and against. So if you're in favor, if you're against, as we've done before. If you have questions for Chris, you want to put your hand up and say point of information, and then you would yield your time to Chris to answer him. Does that make sense?
Yep. I see my time.
So we're in formal debate. I see someone who wants to speak in opposition. Nicole.
Okay.
Favor.
So I have a thing I'm going to just read out. I would like to speak strongly against this resolution. I do not want to waste another minute of the GPSA's time talking about an issue that has already taken up far more time than is justified by its relevance to graduate professional students, and which has already distracted us from more important issues for graduate professional students, like professional development resources, mental health and well-being, graduate community space, stipends, childcare resources for international students, etc. The list goes on and on. To be honest, I didn't even want to include this on the agenda, but I believe that this body should have the responsibility and right.
Can you speak slowly enough so that people can understand you?
Can you not understand me?
I'm sorry.
I want to make sure I get it in. Okay.
You'll be allowed to finish your statement.
You should have the responsibility and right to consider resolutions brought before it, but feel free to disagree with me and continue debate. Okay, that being said, this resolution will change nothing. The GPSA has considered this issue of funding for Slope Day Programming Board for the last year. The recommendation of the Appropriations Committee was made based upon rigorously collected data and analyzed data, with due consideration of the importance of the many organizations that were seeking funding and with respect for the limited means of graduate professional students. Like many units within the university, the GPSA and the organizations that it funds have learned to make do with limited resources available to them and have already figured out how to work within those means to serve the graduate and professional student community. The individuals involved in the behind-the-scenes conversations, including Chris Heckman, Evan Cortens, and Marquise Hawkins, have patiently negotiated in good faith with the Slope Day Programming Board, and I commend their efforts. I feel confident that the GPSA has appropriately represented the views of our constituents, graduate and professional students, in these discussions and in the resolutions that we have already passed. I am proud of the work that the GPSA has done in this issue, and I am ready to move on. The decision about whether or not to accept funding of $3.50 for graduate and professional students now lies with the Slope Day Programming Board. $3.50 is a generous offer, which we feel is consistent with the value of Slope Day for graduate professional students. All available data suggests that accepting the byline funding would be the best possible scenario for Slope Day Programming Board, both in monetary terms and in terms of continuing to fulfill their own mission of an open and inclusive event. If they choose to accept the funding, we would already get a representative on the Slope Day Advisory Board. If they do not accept the funding, then it would be eminently clear that the Slope Day Programming Board has chosen to exclude graduate and professional students from Slope Day. At this point, I'm okay with this outcome. That money would be put to great use funding many, many graduate and professional student organizations and events through the GPSASC. Of course, an ideal outcome would be for Slope Day Programming Board to accept byline funding and continuing to provide free admission to graduate and professional students. And this is the outcome that I enthusiastically support. But again, given the time and effort already invested in the conversation about Slope Day Programming Board, I do not see the value of a working group or any other efforts to continue beating a dead horse. The text of this resolution was not written by graduate and professional students. This is obvious. It is not clear to me that we support Slope Day Programming Board in the sense that seems to be implied in this resolution. To be honest, I don't even know what that means. But it is clear to me that future decisions about Slope Day Programming Board funding, just as they were this year, should be based on the value of the services provided to graduate and professional students. Future appropriations committees should continue to use our judgment and good data to make their recommendations without having undergraduate students put words in our mouth about how graduate professional students should spend their money. The purpose of the GPSA is to represent graduate professional students, and I am proud of what we have already done. With that in mind, I would just like to move to call the question.
The question has been called. Is there a second? Seconded by Kyle. So it requires a two-thirds majority to close debate. With those in favor of calling the question, please raise your green placard. So this is closing debate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 in favor. Those opposed? 1, 2. With a vote of 11 to 2, the question is called. We move now to a vote on Resolution 18, as you see in front of you. This requires a simple majority for passage. With those in favor, please raise your green placards. 1. With those opposed, raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. With a vote of 1 to 10, Resolution 18 is not adopted.
Thank you.
We move now to the next item of business, which is Resolution 16. I'd like to recognize Rebecca.
Hi, so.
Oh, do you want your PowerPoint or do you want this?
Oh,
no, you sent me a PowerPoint before. Do you want me to use that or do you want me to?
Okay. Okay. So let's just cover it. So this is the summary of the data that we analyzed from conversations that transpired over the Diamond Stuff event last fall. We held on a network, 60 or so graduate professional students attended, and we had a list of prompts. Trained note taker and facilitator every single. We broke out after talking to the university and discussed issues about mental health and wellness among graduate students. A huge amount of data, I think it was like 20 pages or 30-ish, all tabulated. And we did an initial thematic analysis with my committee, but for those who halted the first, challenging, worked a lot. So I kind of thought that was already, went through the data, coded it all, and this is what came out. So there are two data collection last semester. The first was a brief survey about gym usage and exercise behavior of graduate students. So the beginning of the resolution here talks first to that. What do you think of it?
It's your call.
Okay, let's just go through that. A survey of research attendees, the first sentence explains that we picked mental health as an issue to target among our community, which is the first row of slides. The next university data pertaining to the issue of mental health and well-being among graduate and professional students in particular is sparse. That's just kind of our personal or my research. The line 8 we start, whereas student advocacy committee chose to focus on the issue, very clear. Next, the committee collected data in two specific contexts. The first, the survey research among the GPSA attendees on a fall 2011 meeting, and the second was the qualitative focus groups that we conducted over the 9 weeks in December. The next line talks about the results of the survey to the GPSA members. We found that graduate professional students, on average, exercise between, or on average, 2.5 times per week. Awesome. Rock on. Next, just over half of the students sampled own a Cornell Fitness membership, 57%. Pretty good number. Of the participants without a gym membership, however, of those, it was about 16 total, 63% mentioned cost and prohibit. Prohibited and the main reason that they did not have a CFA membership. And then in the comment section, there was kind of an open-ended response option on the survey. 13% of respondents mentioned the inadequacy of facilities, either scheduling conflicts or to busy at certain hours, et cetera. And that was something that was included. Next, the second day of the selection was the focus groups over Diamond and Scout. Susan Murphy delivered a talk, a keynote, and then we broke out into special way managers. 60 attended, and from a variety of disciplines in the PowerPoint deck that I put as evidence poll, I broke it out as poll had requested a great comment. So there's a slide on that. Pretty diverse sample, lots of people do, much of what. Vice President Susan Murphy, let's talk about that. Groups, yes, okay, next. Results of the secondary selection. Provide findings in three specific areas. This was, again, from the analysis of the transcript. That current practices among graduates and, these were the three categories of responses. The first was practicing among our colleagues of kind of work-life balance. The second was obstacles that we face to mental health and wellness. And the third were recommendations that were solicited by the participants in the qualitative survey, or folks that tried. Okay, so those are the three categories. And then the first pertains to practices. You guys are exercising, relaxing, community involvement, and socializing. And then the napping. Okay, most often is exercise. The next area of finding contains two obstacles that our community faces. Data indicates that obstacles include fitness centers being costly, difficulty of making friends, lacking integration across departments, norms of promoting work over socializing, a sense of guilt for socializing, which should be at the lab or where have you, demanding schedules and work environments, and lack of awareness. And I have the breakdown of responses in all those categories on the slide. It's a lot more nuanced. Moving on, the final area, recommendations. This is kind of where it gets interesting. There are six. Changing norms, increasing social opportunities, creating a supportive academic environment, developing supportive advisor relationships, increasing utilization of health resources, and promoting prevention behavior. Therefore, be it resolved across these two data collection opportunities, and in talking to students and kind of sitting with the data this weekend, this is kind of cool to see this come out of what we've done. The first being to make opportunities for preventive health behaviors more accessible, i.e. preferably extending some sort of a wellness membership that's available to faculty and staff, to graduate students and professionals. Next, increasing education about graduate school. It was great to hear the discussion about professional development this evening. So something akin to that was something that came up in the data pretty frequently. Institutionalizing not only orientation, during orientation, but making it last. So start to change some of these norms. So education about support services, advisor relationships, and dissertation guidance. Number three, promote use of health resources. And it's a little bit interesting to see in the data how the main thing in this bucket was changing the norm. So obviously that's kind of a digital goal and challenging, but nonetheless it is very authentic. And then finally, collect more and better data. You don't know when it comes to mental health and well-being exactly what the current state is. So there are validated measures out there and some of them should be. So, results that the GPSA expresses willingness to work with the administration to address these issues, and then furthermore, that this be something to
Thanks, Rebecca. We're in formal debate on Resolution 16. Is there anybody who wishes to speak against Resolution 16?
I'd like to
not Chris.
Make a few comments about typographical errors, line 17 and 34 on the first page, whereas it's spelled incorrectly.
Any objection? Seeing none, the resolution is so amended. Further comments and formal debate, Brian?
I have another hopefully friendly amendment. Thank you for working on it, Rebecca. And it is great to see it reported in this form and move some steps going forward. I just had a small question about one of the resolves. I think the first resolve clause. I wonder, does that mean resolve that you wish for the administration to do this thing? I'm wondering if you should say it that way.
Be more effective.
So, or I see that as less aggressive, since we can't actually resolve what the administration will do, but we could resolve that we would like to communicate to them that we want them to do this. Is that what the media is supposed to do? Or?
The hope of that was to make the point that we are a unique population, and that we're deserving of, you know, acknowledgement or treatment of us. So I would certainly welcome that media in addition. Is that just repetitive?
So is that is this a fair statement of your amendment language, Brian?
That's
so moved.
Okay.
Is that the meaning?
Is there any objection to this amendment? Seeing none, the resolution is so amended. Further comments and formal debate? Derek?
Yeah, I guess I just like to say about this resolution. I think the GCI is something that has a lot of currency with the administration, so I think that the golf club is a very, very good way of putting this information forward to the administration by including it in the immigration industry.
Thank you. Further comments and formal debate? Liz?
I just wanted to say it's really good, but maybe we should call a question.
Certainly. If there are no further burning comments, I don't think we need to vote on calling the question. The question is on the adoption of Resolution 16. Those in favor, please raise your green placards. Certainly. I'm the only one who can't. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 in favor. Those opposed? 0. For the vote of 13 to 0, Resolution 16 is adopted. Thank you. Running a little behind, but the next step is pretty quick. Resolution 17, I know, you know me too well. I've got a PowerPoint slide on this. Resolution 17 is an instance of a motion to amend something previously adopted because prior notice was given, which means it was circulated along with the agenda materials and you knew this was coming and hasn't been sprung on you. It requires only a majority vote for passage. So it's treated like a series of amendments to Resolution 11. Resolution 17 is amendable, but the change may not exceed the scope of the previous notice, or else the motion will require two-thirds. I interpret that to mean you don't get to add or remove language substantially, but if there's a wording something that doesn't make sense, that's not going to significantly alter, then we can do it with just a majority. I'll very quickly go through this. Resolution 11, for those of you who were here back in March 26, is a series of amendments to our byline procedures and criteria, mostly procedural. This document, after those amendments were applied, was sent to Council's office. Council's office just had some wording clarifications. Most of this stuff is pretty straightforward. Spell out what the acronyms are in number one. Number two, rewrite the sentence to make sure it's clear that this happens after it's not approved. Number three, this is wrong. I think I had a typo here, and I've undone my typo. It was five there. It's supposed to be six. These will be converted to letters so that it's consistent. Add a line. They noticed that the stuff isn't on the website. I've emailed the Office of Assemblies to correct that. This is actually a tiny little bit of a change. I interpolated what I thought this was supposed to mean, so that the organization, in order to apply for byline funding, has to have received GPSAFC funding for the previous four semesters leading up to their application, not just four semesters at any period in time ever. I'm not seeing anybody shaking their head. I think that's a reasonably fair interpolation. Add seated. Same thing, just worded differently. This was Council's suggestion. I don't really know what it means, but I'm not a lawyer. We expressly reserve the right to revoke activity funding. I mean, only we, the ones who allocate the funding, can choose to then deallocate that funding as a sanction for not complying with the sort of things that are spelled out. Is there anybody who wants to speak in formal debate, or are we okay just moving to a vote on this? I haven't spelled whereas wrong or anything. No, it looks okay. We're okay just moving to a vote then? With those in favor of Resolution 17, a resolution amending previously adopted Resolution 11, I have a knack for titles. Those in favor, raise your green placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Those opposed, there are only 14 people in the room, so nobody is voting against it. With a vote of 13 to 0, Evan is hopefully done with track changes to the byline procedures and criteria. R17, R16. Speaking of Evan, he's got one more thing on the agenda. That would be the annual report. Our charter requires that we do one of these every semester. Pretty straightforward. I just want to make sure that you don't feel that I've vastly misconstrued the actions of this assembly over the semester, or that I've missed anything that you feel is important. You will note that the section on the FC is blank right now. That's because before she was stuck in the airport, Mia was stuck in Europe, you know, at a conference. Oh, must be tough. But I've got those numbers from her now, so I'll update the section so that it says how many applications there were and how much funding was allocated and that sort of thing. Are there any comments or objections? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the year-end report.
So moved.
Moved by Nicole, seconded by Brian. This requires a simple majority. Those in favor, please raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Did I count wrong? Let me try that again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oops, 10, 11, 12, 13. Those opposed, I don't even need to count. Zero, because there are only 14 people in the room. That's that. On to the exciting stuff. Elections. Yes. Yes. I know. Oh, look, there was a slide on that, too. We don't need to read that. Man, Evan, you have too much time on your hands. We elect a bunch of people. We do this every year. These are the people we elect. We'll start with the officers. Officers of the GPSA will be elected at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the GPSA term. That's this one. All GPSA members shall be eligible to elect the officers of the GPSA, so anyone with a placard of any color. The order of the election shall proceed in the order we're going to do it in. To be elected to office, a nominee shall be subject to a majority approval of the GPSA members, which means that even if there's only one person running for the office, we'll do a voice vote. We'll start with GPSA president. Responsibilities of the president. Assure the smooth and effective operation and maintenance of the GPSA, so change the oil, that sort of thing. Delegate responsibilities as needed to accomplish the duties of the office and the goals set forth in this charter and associated bylaws. Somebody needs to proofread these. These are actually the slides from last year. I just copied them over. Chair or appoint a delegate to chair all meetings of the GPSA. Transmit notice of the actions. Serve as a spokesperson. Enumerate actions. Submit some reports. Hey, we just did one of those. And serve as a delegate to the University Assembly. All the presiding officers of the four constituent assemblies are ex officio members of the University Assembly. Chair would entertain nominations for the position of GPSA president. Brian.
I'd like to nominate Nicole Barron.
Nicole, you've been nominated for president. Do you accept?
I respectfully decline.
Nicole declines. Further nominations? Mitch.
I'd like to nominate Nicole.
Mitch nominates himself. I don't need to ask if you accept. I'll just take that as an acceptance. Mitch, further nominations for the office of president? Seeing no further nominations, nominations are now closed. Those in favor of Mitch Payne, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Mitch Payne will be our president for 2012-2013. Congratulations, Mitch. Come on down. You get to run the rest of the meeting. I'll sit right here, though. Kristen just left the room.
She went and got a beer.
Ridiculous.
Thanks, Evan. Bear with me as I learn how to be president while being president. So to my knowledge, the GPSA Executive Vice President does the following. Assists the president as needed, which I could use now. Recruits students reflecting the diverse nature of the university to serve on the GPSA. Maintains an accurate list of the members. Maintains records at all GPSA meetings. Distributes the agenda and meeting materials for all GPSA meetings. Chairs the executive committee of the GPSA. And chair meetings of the GPSA in absence of the president. So, that being said, nominations are now open for executive vice president, right? Awesome. Rebecca?
I wholeheartedly accept.
Fantastic. Are there other nominations for executive vice president? Seeing none, we will move to nominations are now closed, and we will move to a voice vote. All in favor of Nicole Barron as Executive Vice President, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay, or whatever. Fantastic. Nicole Barron is your new Executive Vice President. Fantastic. Now we move to GPSA Vice President for Operations, essentially the internal Vice President, to my knowledge. This person chairs the Operations and Staffing Committee, maintains accurate lists of committee appointees, communication with committee appointees and chairs, coordinates the committee reporting procedures, reviews and updates the GPSA charter and bylaws, chairs meetings of the GPSA in the absence of both the President and Executive Vice President, and as most of you probably know, Marquise is the current Vice President for Operations, and I don't know where he is. So, that being said, nominations are now open for Executive or for Vice President for Operations. Nicole?
I'd like to nominate Eric Smith.
Eric, do you accept?
Yep.
Fantastic. Are there further nominations for Vice President for Operations? Seeing none, nominations are now closed. All in favor of Eric Smith as your Vice President for Operations, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Fantastic. Eric Smith is your new Vice President for Operations. Our next election is counsel to the GPSA. And because we will all want to get wine and beer, I'm going to let you read that. I hope that's fine.
Yes.
The key point is the very last one. The Council of the Assembly must have previously served as a GPSA President, Executive Vice President, or Vice President for Operations.
All right. So, that being said, nominations are open. Derek?
I'd like to nominate everyone's favorite parliamentarian, President Evan Cortez, to this position.
Evan, do you accept?
I do accept.
Fantastic. Are there any other nominations?
Is there anyone else in the room eligible? I guess Nighthawk is eligible.
I'll nominate Nighthawk.
Nighthawk's already won an election within the last couple of days.
This might be tougher. Any further nominations? Seeing none, nominations are now closed. All those in favor of Evan Cortez as counsel to the GPSA, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the same. Fantastic. Congratulations, Evan. Evan. Next, we move into committee chair elections. Committee chair elections.
I just copied and pasted some stuff from the charter. Anybody can serve as a member. Sorry, am I?
Please.
Is that okay? Anybody can serve as a chair. You don't need to be a voting member or even a field rep, but it says that it would be preferential to have voting members be it. And unlike the previous three positions, if we can't actually fill it tonight, it is allowed to remain vacant, and we can fill it as soon as possible. That's it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Council. The first chair that we will elect is GPSA Appropriations. They do the following. Are there any nominations for this year's GPSA Appropriations Chair? Fantastic. Thank you. Any further nominations? All right. Seeing none, nominations are closed. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Fantastic. Congratulations, Bill. The next chair we'll elect is the communications chair. They do the following. They will do the following. Are there any nominations for communications chair? Nicole?
I'd like to nominate Margaret.
Fantastic. Are there further nominations? Seeing none, nominations are closed. All in favor of Marcus, right? Marcus for communications chair, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the same? Fantastic. Congratulations, Marcus. Move on to the finance commission chair, who will do the following. They have to serve on the GPSA Appropriations Committee. Are there any nominations for Finance Commission Chair? Evan, please.
On behalf of MIA, I would like to nominate Vinay Pagay.
Fantastic. Are there further nominations? All right, nominations are closed. All in favor of, please say your name again.
Vinay,
thank you. As Finance Commission Chair, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the same. Congratulations. Now we move to GPSA Student Advocacy Chair. They will do the following. Are there nominations for GPSA Student Advocacy Chair? Rebecca?
Can I nominate Yevgeny Israel?
Please.
Yevgeny couldn't be with us today because he's on the other side of the ocean. In the event of an election, many of you know him, he served as a voting member until he had to leave. In the event of an election, he has sent in a short statement that I will read on his behalf.
So I guess we're assuming he's going to accept?
He's accepted.
Okay, fantastic. Are there any other nominations for Student Advocacy Chair? Seeing none. Nominations are closed. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Fantastic. All opposed? Great. Congratulations to
Yevgeny.
Our last chair is the Programming Board Chair, who will do the following. Are there nominations for Programming Board Chair? Please. Can we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you both accept? Great. Thank you. Are there further nominations for chair or co-chairs?
You have to run against two people, so that's...
Any further nominations? Seeing none, nominations are closed. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Awesome. Fantastic. Congratulations on our co-chair. Now we elect the University Assembly
Motion
delegates.
Motion to extend the meeting by
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Seconded.
Okay.
Thank you. Seconded by Evan.
Any objection? Sorry.
Okay. No, please.
Seeing no objection.
The meeting is extended by 2 minutes. University Assembly delegates, can you please explain?
So we get three delegates. One of them is the president. The other two we get to elect. We can elect anybody. If they're not already a voting member, then they're ex officio on the voting body, not as a voting member, though, so that they're on the mailing list and stuff. I hope everybody knows what the University Assembly is. It's not a hierarchical body, but it's a body that consists of representatives from all four constituencies on campus, so that's faculty, non-faculty employees, undergraduate students, and graduate and professional students. It's a 19-member body, if I'm doing my math right. Well, it doesn't matter. They have three committees, jurisdiction over things like the campus code, transportation policy. I've served on the university assembly for 2 years. It was excellent. I strongly recommend it.
Fantastic. Thank you. Are there nominations for our two positions? Evan, please.
I'd like to nominate Liz Newberry.
Fantastic. Please.
I'd like to nominate myself.
Do you accept your own?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you. Are there further nominations?
Not seeing any.
Seeing none. We have two nominations, Kyle, James. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same. Fantastic. Now we have two new University Assembly delegates.
Yay.
The election results I will send.
I'll put in there, yeah.
So, there we go.
Motion to adjourn.
Sorry, I was calling the wrong member to you.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I'm not chairing the meeting.
Yes.
Seeing as I'll open microphones to discuss topics that people not on the assembly would have the opportunity to discuss during the meeting, and how there were no community members given the right to speak during, I think the number of Resolution 15 regarding SOPE, would I be permitted a minute or so to speak on open microphone?
Not entirely positive how this works.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, you're recognized for 1 minute.
I agree.
I also do recognize.
All right, thank you.
We'll share in a minute.
We'll consider that as a part and parcel with a motion to extend the meeting.
Great. Just to quickly introduce ourselves, my name is Renil Desai. I am the VP Finance for the Undergraduate Student Assembly. I've been on the Appropriations Committee for the last 3 years.
Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Gidman. I'm the incoming president of the Student Assembly, and I've also been on the Appropriations Committee for 3 years.
So, I think we just wanted to very briefly discuss, I guess, where our rationale was behind the resolution and the conversations we had with the leaders of the GPS settings, both things. And you want to start off?
Yeah, just to start off, we haven't personally been as involved in the deliberations over the past year. We were getting updates from SLOPE and UPSA leaders. We stepped in sort of more recently, and we wanted to reframe the discussion with the SLOPE and GPSA leaders as looking at it, not necessarily sort of the more turbulent discussions that occurred over the past year, but more looking at it as a longer-term sort of working relationship between SLOPE and GPSA. The FA brought the two sort of parties together to discuss it, and we sort of came to sort of this informal resolution about working on a working relationship between SLOPE and GPSA. The point of the working group in the resolution would be to identify ways in which SLOPE could be valued more by graduates. The spirit of the resolution was meant to really look forward, not to look backwards, which is sort of more sentiment than you would have
been. I guess there was no mention of like a change in allocation or anything like that in the resolution. I think, you know, we kind of identified a disparity between the value that graduate students saw in SLOPE Day and the value that SLOPE Day thought it presented to graduate students. And kind of the point of this committee was to push that relationship forward and kind of build a bridge between two sides that obviously have differing opinions. And most importantly, to find productive solutions as to how we can increase what SLOPE Day can do for graduate students and make it more of a university-wide event instead of an undergraduate event. We have really no stake in what happens here. You know, our costs are covered. It doesn't affect our experience. I guess I got involved with this mostly because I've seen the Appropriations Committee be executed for the last 3 years, and I think that there's currently a discrepancy where both sides are losing, and we're not at a Pareto equilibrium for any of the economists in the room.
And this resolution never said that the GPSA didn't argue in good faith. It was not about that. It wasn't about sort of both sides, you know, who argued or even sort of, you know, necessarily the merits of the findings. As Romeo said, it really was not, you know, a major factor of this resolution. All this was looking at the Cornell community and the Cornell campus and trying to envision a solution that worked for both the undergraduate and graduate constituents.
So I know you guys all want to get out of here, and I guess I just want to wrap it up with this last note that, you know, we just saw all of your executive board members and leaders of this assembly get elected for next year. Me and Adam are both currently third years, will be here next year as well, and I guess my hope is that, you know, aside from whatever happened in this room today, we can continue those discussions and have a productive conversation that benefits the university as a whole next year and prepares us for the 2014 bylaw funding cycle. If any of you would like to reach out to any of us, my NetID is RPD56. I would be happy to discuss, you know, appropriations committee, non-appropriations committee, concerned graduate student. You know, at the end of the day, we want to make Cornell a better university for students, not a better university for undergraduates. And I think we're committed to that, and you guys are as well. We look forward to making that happen.
Great, thank you. And I'm going to delegate the chair now to Evan. Please, Evan.
So I'll finish it up. Thanks to Adam and Reneal. I don't want anybody to feel like they've been cut off, like they haven't had a chance. If you would like to respond to Adam and Reneal's comments by voting again on Resolution 18, if you were one of the people who voted against it, you can make a motion to reconsider, and then we'll vote on that. But if you feel okay with the vote as it happened, then you don't need to make such a motion. Is there any motions on the floor? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. Randa, seconded by Nicole. Any objection? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.